Well, come on, all of you big strong men. Uncle Sam, need your help again. Got himself in a terrible jam, way down yonder in Vietnam. Put down your books and pick up a gun. We're gonna have a whole lot of fun. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why. Woo-wee, we're all gonna die. Now come on, Wall Street, don't be slow. I'm man, this is war, a go-go. There's plenty of good money to be made, supplying the army with the tools of the trade. Just hope and pray that if they drop the bomb, they drop it on the Viet Cong. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why. Whoopee, we all gonna die. Now come on, generals, let's move fast. Your big chance is here at last. Now you can go out and get those reds, cause the only good commie is one that's dead. You know that peace can only be won when we're blowing them all the kingdom come. Sing it! 1, 2, 3.
What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn.
Louder!
Stop this Vietnam. And in 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why. But we all wanna die.
Listen, people, I don't know how you expect to ever stop the war if you can't sing any better than that. There's about 300,000 of you fuckers out there. I want you to start singing. Come on. And it's 1, 2, 3.
What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7.
Open up the pearly gates. Well, I ain't no time to wonder why. Woo-hoo, we're all gonna die. Now come on, mothers throughout the land. Pack your boys off to Vietnam. Come on, fathers, don't hesitate. And send your sons off before it's too late. Be the first one on your block. Have your boy come home in a box. All right! 1, 2, 3.
What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates.
Country Joe, I feel like I'm fixing to die rag, or otherwise known as the Vietnam song. I thought it would be a good way to start this Misadventures in Music podcast, Ian, because it's on the subject of war, yep, very appropriately for today, and yep, anti-war and peace and stuff.
Yeah, well, as we record this, the war in Ukraine is raging, and which is what has inspired us to do a podcast specifically on it. But what we will cover is all aspects of war. It won't just be anti-war songs in that tradition. We're going to look at some other stuff as well.
Yeah, from different angles.
Different angles. And I was not familiar with that song, because that's your generation and not mine, Michael.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's great. And he when he talks, some of the lyrics in, I've listened to a few versions of the song, and you know, he even goes in on the military industrial complex, which we will touch upon. War is a moneymaker, so yeah, he really gets to the kernel of the situation there in that old song.
Interesting guy, Country Joe. Country Joe and the Fish were from the California area. That's where they came up with Jefferson Airplane and those bands, Grateful Dead, in the mid to late 60s. And his mum and dad were communists. They were American Party communists. In fact, they named him, according to Wiki, they named their lad after Stalin.
Joseph.
Wow. Sounds, yeah, something like an Alexei Sayle songbook, yeah, rather than, yeah, Country Joe. But then they renounced Stalin later. And he sang this song on Woodstock, and it went, yeah, down a storm with the crowd, as you can imagine. Yeah. And then he broke up the Fish around this time. And really interesting guy, because I remember listening to Radio 1 in the very early 70s when I was 13 or 14. And he was playing in concert, and he was playing an album that he made called War, 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 that was based on the poems of a Canadian poet called Robert Service. And Robert Service served in the First World War as an ambulance driver. He joined up quite late, I think, about 1915 or so, and he was 40, 41. His poetry before and after the war, it was more pastoral. The poems that he wrote during and about the war were really moving.
Yeah.
and Country Joe based this whole album on them. And I'd really recommend that. The track I remember was The Man from Alphabasta, I think it was called, or The Man from Alabaster, something like that. It's 7 minutes long. We ain't going to play it today. But it was an interesting way of him trying to continue with his anti-war theme by going back to the First World War and using that as an inspiration for his music. It was quite a departure from what Country Joe and the Fish did. And when we heard the beginning of that song where they would, give us an F, give us a U, when he was with the Fish, they used to start their concerts by, give us an F, give us an I, give us an S, give us an H. And he changed it for Woodstock. And that,
it's very brave of him to sing that, because that's, you know, the whole weight of the establishment, and we'll come to that in our next song, would have been promoting the war, excusing the war and everything. Lesser people than him would have found themselves either incarcerated or, if you were black, worse for being so anti-establishment. And so for him to stand on the stage in front of all those people, you know, or he would have almost certainly come to the attention of the authorities and found himself on a list or two for the CIA or whichever agency was, you know, looking out for modern day Reds Under the Beds or whatever. So fair play to him for having the bravery to sing that.
He was part of the big anti-war movement. After that became quite a, you know, I mean, I didn't see Woodstock, the film, till sort of the mid to late 70s. Yeah. And even then it was quite, wow, did you see that guy doing that? You know, everybody remembers from the Woodstock film, if they've seen it, you know, Hendrix playing as the last act and the crowds are going home. But the Country Joe thing was quite a big moment in that film. And if you haven't seen it, it's definitely worth catching.
Yeah.
Because you get the crowd really get up for it. Whereas Woodstock itself, in many ways, was a shambles. You know, it was complete shambles.
Yeah.
Miles and miles of cars. There weren't enough for toilet facilities. People were going hungry. Yeah. You know, there were people OD'ing on drugs and everything. Yeah. But the film kind of paints it quite different. I think there's a Redux version of the film that came out a couple of years ago, and that's a slightly more accurate picture.
Nevertheless, it, for him to have played that song in front of so many people would have had would have been a catalyst of sorts for a lot of an alternative news source from what people would have usually been getting.
Definitely.
To try and bring about the end of the war.
And fair play to the film's editors and producers for keeping it in. Because a lot of stuff, what a lot of people don't know is that a lot of the acts who played at Woodstock weren't included in the film or the album.
Oh, okay.
For all kinds of reasons. Some of it was contractual, you know, some of it was, oh, we didn't like our performance and stuff. There's a lot of stuff that didn't make that original movie, and fair play to them for putting that in.
Okay. Well, the Vietnam theme continues with our next song, and we are, you know, our era, despite the fact that Britain wouldn't get involved, Wilson wouldn't let us get involved directly in Vietnam, we are, all of us, even for Rory here who's recording us, will be hyper aware of what the Vietnam thing was because of the films. You know, there was a whole slew of films, Apocalypse Now, Deer Hunter, Hamburger Hill, Born on the 4th of July. You know, there was so many, wasn't it, that came out. And it's sort of, it's a big part of, because we're so influenced by America, it's almost as if we were, you know, this country was involved, you know, physically. They basically all make the same point that it was an awful, awful waste, what happened in Vietnam, and unjustified and unjustifiable. And also, you know, America got beat, man. It was the biggest, you know, the most powerful and biggest military nation on earth got beat by essentially a gang of peasants. Should we have the next song then?
Cigarettes and a bottle of beer. This poem that I wrote for you. This black stone and these hot tears. All I got left now of you. I remember you in the Marine uniform, living at your Chappelle party. I read Robert McNamara, says he's sorry. Your high boots and striped t-shirt. I believe you looked so bad. Yeah, you and your rock and roll band, you were the best thing this shit town ever had. Another minute put you here, eat with their families in rich dining halls. An apology and forgiveness got no place here at all. Hit the wall.
The Wall by Bruce Springsteen from the High Hopes record of, I think, 2013, something like that. And the wall in question is, there's a wall in Washington, D.C., with all of I think it was 56,000 American soldiers perished in Vietnam. And there's a, in the song, he's got his hand on the wall and he's gone to find somebody that he knew. Springsteen goes to find, I think his name's Walter Ciccone, and he was the local rock star when Bruce was a kid, and he went to Vietnam, never came back. So it's kind of a song in honour of him and how, you know, he looked up to him when he was a kid, but he died. And, you know, Springsteen was of the generation whereby he went, you know, he had to come up with some excuse not to get drafted. You know, and there's all sorts of stories about why Bruce didn't get drafted. He pretended he was gay. He said he had an injury from a motorcycle accident. Whatever it was, he didn't go. There, for the grace of God, go I. You know, and that's the way that this song, "The Wall," is couched upon. He's at the wall, Bruce. He's got his hand on his old friend's name. And he's wondering about, you know, what happened to him while he was there in Vietnam, and how it all came to pass for him. And there's a really, there's a key line in there. And the key line for me is, Robert McNamara says he's sorry. And Robert McNamara was the defense minister,
yeah,
who basically beat the drums for war in Vietnam for the Americans to go over there. Bearing in mind, Vietnam was not an American colony; it was a French colony.
Yeah.
So they were, but they were going there in order to try and stop communism. The whole idea of socialist society was had sown seeds all over the world in poorer countries, and the Americans thought that they could go in and, you know, stop that. They reckoned without 3 million Vietnamese being prepared to give their lives to defend their country, you know. And they used all of the might of the American media and television and everything. Now, years later, he was quite contrite about it, McNamara. And people, oh, you know, he realised it was a bad thing. But other commentators have said that it just ain't enough. And there's a great writer, Peter Raines, and he says that McNamara's public contrition came at almost 30 year removed from when it might have had any effect, because the war went on for quite a long time, you know. He said, surely he must in every quiet and prosperous moment hear the ceaseless whispers of those poor boys in the infantry dying in the tall grass, platoon by platoon, for no purpose. What he took from them cannot be repaid by primetime apology and stale tears 3 decades later.
Wow.
So, and that's what I think Bruce is alluding to in the song. You know, Robert McNamara says he's sorry, so it's okay. Now, this brings to mind, the people who make these decisions, like Robert McNamara, like Tony Blair, like Alistair Campbell. People die when these decisions are made. Now, you might say that somebody's got to do it and everything, and I get that too, but how on earth does it affect them in later life? How do they live with themselves? How does it work, you know, in their own psychology? I find that fascinating. You know, how do they square it?
Well, there was an interview with Tony Blair, the Archbishop Wells.
Yeah, recently. Yeah.
And he says it does play. Of course it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying, of course it wasn't. He says it does play with him. He does think about it every day. Whether McNamara did or whether these other did. And is that enough?
Well, but Blair has never publicly said, I was wrong. He said it just plays on his mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Tony Blair, I will state now, was wrong. What came out of that was, you know, was warned about, and how the destabilizing effects of just going in there, you know. Something like 70% of Americans thought that Iraq was responsible for 9/11. And they knew that. You know, the media, the
politicians,
they knew that they were hoodwinking, you know, an entire swathe of American, you know, public opinion. So that, from that perspective, I love Springsteen's song, which melodically for me draws heavily from Sting's Field of Gold, and you think there's a bit of Go Lassie Go in there.
It's got that lilt to it. To me, I'm going to have to go back to it and maybe look at the lyrics, but a huge sadness came over it.
Absolutely.
It's not what I would call an angry song.
No.
The first one we heard from Country Joe was kind of as ironic as you can get, sarcasm. And this is a different vibe, isn't it?
Well, there's that, you know, apology and forgiveness don't mean anything. I've got no business here at all, at the war. You know, and the limousines going down Pennsylvania Avenue, the men that make the big decisions.
Yeah.
This has got nothing to do with them. And as we go on in this podcast, we will discuss and look at all of these aspects of how war affects, you know, ordinary people's lives. You see it out on the street when you walk down here in Liverpool City Centre. Many of the homeless have little placards.
Yes.
Saying ex-servicemen and everything. You know, they're called upon when the drums of war are being beaten to go to Iraq or Afghanistan or even into Ireland. At that time, it's like, you know, it's like people are almost drunk on the idea of what has to be done in defence of this country or for liberty or whatever.
Yeah.
And then once they've been used, they are just dispensed with and forgotten about, you know. And the society that used them does not care about them. So that's...
And that's been true for...
Absolutely. Yeah.
The next one we're playing is Nina Simone, Backlash Blues, and we'll talk about this after we play it.
Mr. Backlash, just who do you think I am? You raise my taxes, freeze my wages, and send my son to Vietnam. You give me second-class houses and second-class schools. Do you think that all colored folks are just second-class fools, Mr. Backlash? Backlash blues. When I try to find a job to earn a little cash, all you got to offer is your mean old white backlash. But the world is big, big and bright and round, and it's full of folks like me who are black, yellow, baby. Backlash. I'm gonna leave you with a backlash blue. Mr. Backlash, just what do you think I got to lose? I'm gonna leave you with the backlash blues. You're the one who'll have the blues, not me. Just wait and see.
Unmistakable voice of Nina Simone there. It was based, Backlash Blues is a poem by Langston Hughes, who Malik mentioned in the previous podcast that we did. And it was later given a melody and sung by Nina Simone, and it was written as a sign of hope for black people during a time of segregation and white supremacy. And it is an anti-war song. It's more about civil rights. It's the bigger picture, what it's like to be given second-class housing and treated like a second-class citizen and then asked to call up and fight for your country.
Well, it makes the point, which we're all too familiar with here, that since austerity came in 2010, because after the financial crisis of 2008, which was essentially a crisis caused by the banks and rich people, the Conservative coalition then made all of us pay for their, you know, and the mantra was the country's broke. We've got to, you know, all tighten our belts, which basically means that down in the lower echelons of society, you know, bedroom taxes and services cut, which affect people's lives and in some cases, kill people off, you know. What we're dealing with here is that this country, it was never broke. It's stinking rich. Because at the drop of a hat, if a war kicks off, the money is found immediately. And it's not just a few bob, it's billions and billions and billions of pounds. You know, it's like this thing with the track and trace costing 37 billion quid. And it all went to waste. You know, a billion quid found overnight to bribe the DUP so there's no Corbyn government. So the idea that we're broke is just bollocks. It's class war. That's all that is. So what she's singing about in this song is, why can't you give us decent schools and housing and amenities? You know, but you can spend millions and millions at the drop of a hat fighting somebody, 8,500 miles away in Vietnam. And it reminds me of the classic Muhammad Ali thing. I'm not going over there to fight those people, you know, when they've never done nothing to me.
Well, his quote was, wasn't it, no Viet Cong ever call me nigger.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I remember,
And that's the in a nutshell, is I think what she's talking about in this song. And I know that it's another Vietnam themed song, but actually it's a big, as you said, it's a bigger picture of...
From a different angle.
What nations, when they want to find their money, you know, old Tony Benn quote, isn't it? You know, why can't we, why do we have to have raffles and things for kidney machines, but we never have to have them for rockets and guns? There again, you know, it's a classic protest song.
Yeah. And that that blues vibe to it just works, yeah. doesn't it? You know. Yeah.
We're gonna do a podcast on Viper Records as well, and I think that particular song, Paul Hemmings's label, would work brilliantly.
Oh, yeah, it would do, wouldn't it?
So, I think the next song,
yes, it's one of your heroes, isn't it, Christy Moore?
Yeah, but this comes again from a completely different angle. So let's have a listen to it.
And 10 years before I saw the light of morning, a comradeship of heroes was leaping. From every corner of the world came sailing the 15th International Brigade. They came to stand beside the Spanish people, to try and stem the rising fascist tide. Franco's allies were the powerful and wealthy. Frank Ryan's men came from the other side. Even the olives were bleeding as the battle for Madrid it thundered on. To root in love against the force of evil, brotherhood against the fascist left. Bob Hillard was the Church of Ireland pastor. From Killarney across the Pyrenees he came. From Derry came a brave young Christian brother. Side by side they fought and died in Spain. Tommy Woods at 17 died in Cordoba. Fianac, he learned to hold a gun. From Dublin to the Villa del Rio, where he fought and died beneath the Spanish sun. Viva la Quinta Brigada, no pastor and the pledge that men have fought. Adelante is the crier on the hillside. Let us them tonight. Many Irishmen heard the call of Franco, joined Hitler, Mussolini too. The propaganda from the pulpit and newspaper had Dodd Duffy to gather up his crew. And the word came from the church, support the Nazi. Lord, they failed again. But the bishops blessed the blue shirts down in Galway as they sailed beneath the swastika to Spain. Viva la Quinta Brigada, no pastor and the pledge that made him fight. Adelante is the cry on the hillside. Let us remember them tonight. This song is a tribute to Frank Ryan. Yet Conway and Denny Cody too. Peter Daly, Charlie Reagan and Hugh Bonner. Though many died, I can but name a few. Danny Boyle, Blazer Brown and Charlie Donnelly. Liam Tomlinson and Jim Thraney from Short Strand. Jack Nelty, Tommy Patton and Frank Conroy. Jim Foley, Tony Fox and Dick O'Neill. Viva la Quinta Brigada, no keen to regard. Let us remember them tonight. Gonna gallow get evil the keen to regard. Let us remember them tonight.
Recorded live at the Barrowlands. Now, this is an interesting song because it's not an anti-war song. In some cases, it might be to be, you know, it's lauding a specific war. And I think the reason for that is this isn't obviously a war between nations. This is the Spanish Civil War, which the song is about, was a war between ideals. People from all over, and many from Liverpool, joined the International Brigade to go and defend the Spanish Republic against fascism. And he lists all of the Irish people who went there as well. So what we're talking about here is the idea that a civil war has completely different impulses to, say, other wars, like what we're seeing in Ukraine, you know, at the moment. And obviously, Christy is singing in honour of these people. And within the you know, socialist tradition, those who went to fight, like George Orwell and Jack Jones from here, against fascism and for the idea that we should be living with each other in communities against the individualism of fascism, is heroic and has always been heroic. Those men and women is one of the first times that the women were fighting on the front line. An amazing thing, you know. They actually got beat as well, you know, which because they had a lot of assistance from Hitler's Third Reich at the time. And so this is a completely different angle on a war.
It is, and he's having a go. There's a great line in, well, there's so many great lines in there, but the bishops blessed the blue shirts in Galway.
Down in Galway, as
that
they sailed
beneath.
That was
the Irish version of the black shirts.
Yeah, that's right, as they sailed beneath the swastika for Spain. Yeah. The Catholic Church, yet again, incredibly suspect relationship with fascism. And, you know, they're so deeply conservative, the Church, that they're not really concerned with, you know, your personal moral salvation. They're concerned with their own power structure. They encourage people to go and, you know, fight for Franco side, which is a fascist thing. And these songs are incredibly important for keeping up our side of the story. Otherwise, you know, get forgotten about. As I say, that's recorded in Barrowlands, right in the, you know, at the east end of Glasgow, where people will be steeped in socialist and republican thought and history. So Christy absolutely nails that there.
Yeah, he does. It's a great tune, and you can hear the crowd joining in, and it's got all the key elements, but it touches on some very, very difficult issues, doesn't it? You know, and it doesn't gloss over them.
No, it doesn't, and it's still war, you know.
Yeah, of course.
You know, these aren't people going to war because our country's being invaded, or I'm fighting for England, or I'm fighting for whichever nation state that you are patriotically believing. Fellas left here in Liverpool and women left here in Liverpool to fight for an idea which exists in all of our minds, which is a completely different thing.
It is. It's a different call.
You know what I mean? It's like attempting to advance humanity in a way, to say, you know, we've got to be better than this. And if we let this fascist ideal win in Spain, then we're asking for trouble. And look at the trouble that came after that, you know, indeed. Which was, you know, what Hitler went on to do. And the classification of human beings into races and, you know, and subhumans and everything. And everything that followed after that with the Holocaust, obviously mainly for the Jewish people, but also for lots of others, the Roma and homosexuals and everything else.
I mean, that song was quite obviously about war and about the call to arms.
Yeah.
This next one isn't quite obviously about that, but it is.
Okay.
Any excuse to play an REM track, eh?
What a record. What an intro.
Yeah.
Yeah. What fascinates me is that yourself and Rory here, you didn't know what it was about when you first heard it.
Not at all. I was just doing some research for this podcast thinking, we've got to have a popular song in. You know, it can't all be too obscure. And then reading the... I mean, it's really interesting, the blurb I'm reading from my phone at the moment. It was on Top of the Pops, and the presenter remarked on camera after they performed the song on Top of the Pops, great on a summer's day, that's Orange Crush. And in actual fact, in case people don't know, it refers to Agent Orange, a chemical used by the US Army to defoliate the Vietnamese jungle during the Vietnam War. And US military personnel themselves were later exposed to it later, developed cancer years later, and some of their children had birth defects.
Yeah.
And you would, you know, when you hear that on the radio without listening to it, you would never know that. But what a powerful kind of lyric that is here. It's a kind of, and such an amazing tune.
Brilliant song. Somebody said the other day that it's the most REM sounding REM song, and it is, because it's got all the aspects with mixed fantastic backing vocals, Michael's delivery, brilliant guitar from Peter Buck, and a hell of a drum track for Mr. Berry. So it is a wonderful piece of music, but it you know, it has the subtext of Agent Orange, which is a war crime. You know, the dropping of Agent Orange on, and because we're in the middle of it now, it's very, very interesting, because the first thing I did when the Ukrainian war kicked off was delete my BBC news app on my phone. I deleted it immediately, because they immediately started to propagandize and fill every single story was about the war, but not from a fair perspective, just propaganda. Every single one. And I'm going to go elsewhere for my news sources. You know, without a shadow of a doubt, as far as I'm concerned, Russia should withdraw from Ukraine, and we should, and the war should stop. That is just a given for me.
Yeah.
A lot of the other stuff, though, I find very problematic. I find the hypocrisy from certainly in this country just astounding. That all of a sudden there's blue and yellow flags everywhere, and we're all, the whole kind of falling in behind. And I know it's been said, you will have seen it on social media and everything, but what about Palestine? What about Yemen? What makes one refugee better than another? Those people coming across the channel in boats and sinking and dying in the English Channel, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you dare to go on Twitter when this is going on, you get people openly saying, just shoot them, they won't ever come back again. And now it's like people stand up, oh yeah, we'll have Ukrainian refugees. So there's a hierarchy, again, of races. The brown refugees, no, go and die in the channel. These guys, yeah, come on. So the hypocrisy of the whole thing is the thing that struck me most about where we are in this. And there's also that thing of trying to make a saint out of Zelensky, you know, is really problematic for me as well. And the entire narrative, especially from the BBC, about where they're talking about Ukraine, they were talking about it completely differently 5 years ago. You know, they have an official Nazi battalion in their army, in their official army. Now, if you speak to, you'll get people who are calling socialists anti-Semites left, right and centre, all over social media. You know, with the thinnest of evidence, with no room for any sort of nuance or anything. Now they're bending over backwards to explain that, you know, oh no, there's only a very, very small percentage of Nazis in there. And it sickened me to my core, to be perfectly honest with you.
It'll cause problems for him as well, because when you build up a personality like that, as Putin was built up by George Bush in the very early days, it comes back. So, I mean, however, killing people is wrong.
No, and the invasion is
the ultimate.
Unjustifiable. And, you know, people are dying out there, absolutely unjustifiable. Putin will have his own right. Putin's a nationalist, you know, and a populist, and a deeply, deeply conservative. He'll have his own right wing there saying, are you really going to let an American military border, American military organization border our entire Western Front? And they've been saying for years and years, if NATO keeps coming, we're going to kick off. We're going to, rightfully or wrongly, they've been telling them for years. This was always going to happen. It was never not going to happen, you know. And it's the way that it's couched and the way that it's put and justified, and it stinks to high heaven, doesn't it? I mean, with, you know, son of a KGB in the Lords, Lebedev, and it's, you know, a mate of Johnson's. And then today, you know, it's come out now that Keir Starmer's sending him the private text. Oh, well done, you know, opener. And the whole thing stinks to high heaven with corruption and money. And I think one of the great things about the democratic nature of social media is we get to see all of this and we get to make our own minds up and we get to realise that it ain't come out of a vacuum,
no,
this situation in Ukraine, you know, and what's going on in the eastern provinces of Ukraine with the Russian population there. And then the clear Nazi problem that we, you know, it ain't just good guys and bad guys.
No. Well, war very rarely is. It depends what lens you're looking through it. And I try to get as many as possible. I haven't deleted my BBC app as a former BBC man, but I do try and look around and see as much. And just getting back to that song, that is, again, it's just scratch below the surface and you're thinking, hang on, what's happening? Oh, this song is about Agent Orange. It's not about a summer drink on a happy day, even though the tune itself is very much of that type. And in a sense, that makes it more powerful. It's just because the tune's so blooming fantastic, you think, how many people realise that what it's about, and how much does that matter to Michael Stipe?
It's fabulous, isn't it? You know, it's fabulous. Yeah. And again, you know, brings in, you've seen it called for on, you know, in the British media about, as soon as this is over, Putin's got to pay for his war crimes and all of that sort of stuff. Yeah. Well, Agent Orange is a war crime, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And let's get Putin to pay for his war crimes. Let's get all of them who's ever committed a war crime to pay for them, you know, and get them all in The Hague, as far as I'm concerned. I have no particular side to choose other than the ordinary people in Ukraine and in Russia.
And the fact that in that bit I read out before about, you know, the military personnel and their kids are still affected by this, never mind the poor people.
It brings the whole thing into, war's profitable. You know, war is very, very profitable. So they always, I was looking at the other day at, you know, how the stocks for Lockheed have gone in the past, you know, month.
Yeah.
Through the roof.
Of course.
Money has been made hand over fist. Does any of it get down to our communities or, you know?
Yeah.
No. Which brings us on neatly to our...
Very neatly.
our final song, which is an Al Billy Bragg song.
All out of sight, digging into dinner on a plate on my knees, smell a damp webbing in the morning breeze, fear in my stomach, fear in the sky, eat my dinner with a weary eye, after all this it won't be the same, messing around and souls breed blind. Pick up the thin falling, move out, we're going to a party way down south, me and the corporal out to the spree, damned from here to eternity. Sons and fathers and brothers and lovers, I can take the killing, I can take the slaughter, but I don't talk to sun reporters. I never thought that I would be fighting fascists in the Southern Sea. So on today, and in his hand was a weapon that was made in Birmingham. Pick up your feet, fall in, move out, we're going to a party way down south, me and the corporal out to the spree, damned from here to eternity.
to record our pursuits for posterity. Me and the corporal out on a spree, damned from here to eternity.
I think that's 1983, a song about the Falklands War, and the key killer lines for me, which shocked me when I was a young man listening to that, young lad, saw one today, and in his hand was a weapon that was made in Birmingham,
yeah.
Talking about an Argentinian young soldier on the Falklands, because that blows the whole thing open.
It does, doesn't it?
You know, that just goes...
Profiteering.
Yeah, profiteering, hang on, what the hell's this all about? Why are they shooting at us, trying to kill us with weapons that we made? What's that all about, you know? And it was incredibly educational for me at that time, you know. What's the real story here? Because you sold it on one level about it being about liberty, or, you know, your nation being under attack or whatever it is. And then you realise it's much darker than that. There's all sorts of stuff going on.
So did you chase it up after listening to Ireland and No Return? Did you kind of try to find out,
literally,
you know, what the hell was that?
Yeah. Well, it's the same as in the, I think he was inspired by the Clash song, Washington Bullets. Check the British bullets in his armoury, in any war-torn swamp, as you see any mercenary. You kind of realise that the... Just even to say it is you hear it in conspiracy theory circles, but this is actually, you know, this is like a fact, an economic fact. You know, the big government and people who make these things, they're all intertwined, you know, because there's so much money involved in war has always been profitable, as the very first song that we did today talks about. So I felt like a wake up. For when I was a kid, that there was another thing that I wasn't being told,
yes.
From my media, from my experiences, that all of a sudden Billy was important, a piece of information which was really important.
Yeah. Well, I had a wake-up call as well before this podcast, because I said to you, well, why don't we play that that song, Kiev Calling? Because I'd heard about it, and I'd heard that the Clash gave it their blessing, so I thought, well, it must be fine. And when I suggested to you, you nearly fell off your chair. So go on.
Well, it's kind of, in a nutshell, it kind of exposes the whole thing. Because, you know, everybody, certainly of my age, would go, oh, Kiev Calling, this is a way we can support them.
Based on the Clash.
Yeah, there's this band, and then one of the good things, again, about social media, people... In the know, people who make this their business immediately pointed out that the band themselves were wearing T-shirts with a well-known Ukrainian and very controversial hero called Stepan Banderos, who was a Nazi. So they immediately, you know, Billy had posted the song and the Clash had posted it, and a discussion took place immediately about this, you know. So Billy Braggart had posted the song, like a lot of people did. A lot of people, because people know how much I love the Clash, they sent it to me.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I thought it was sus immediately. I was kind of, I'm not going to repost this myself. But within a day, a conversation had taken place online and said, these guys are all wearing this Banderas T-shirt in the style of the old Ramones T-shirt. That people were doing research on who this guy was. Now, he helped facilitate part of the Holocaust out of the Ukraine, and he was an extreme right-wing nationalist and a Nazi. He did actually get put in one of the Nazis' camps for not... because he wasn't doing exactly as they would say, and eventually let out. But the whole story from this band's perspective is, oh, during the war we were, you know, it was the Russians coming into Ukraine that we were against. So it was, they basically then got in touch with Billy Bragg and had a conversation and said, it was much more complex. So all of a sudden, injected into the conversation was the idea of nuance in countries, which, as Chris Williamson, the ex-Labour MP, pointed out, is you weren't affording me any nuance when you were accusing me wrongly of anti-Semitism and parroting the entire thing about, you know, trying to undermine the socialist project under Corbyn, and I was kicked out of the party and all of these sort of things. But all of a sudden, it's nuance now, is it? Yeah. That this, okay. And we're actually... And Billy took the song down, then put it back up again, and said, "Oh, I've spoken to the guys, and it's, you know, it's not as simple as all that." What? It doesn't get any simpler. The guy was a Nazi.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all I have to say about that.
So we're not playing it anyway.
We are not playing it.
And we won't be playing it in the next episode either.
No.
But in the next episode, as you mentioned before, we've got Paul Hemmings from the Viper label.
Yeah.
And we've already recorded, but I can say you're in for a treat with that, because
it's beautiful.
Some of the songs that label has published over the years are amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. And if you haven't heard of them, listen out for it.
Oh, it's a thrill. Proper thrill.
Vintage stuff from the past 100 years, really, isn't it?
You're going to basically find out where rock and roll really came from. Right? We'll see you next time.
See you next time.